So we'd like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevis for sponsoring this morning's lock. Similarly, Lily and Ishmael, Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yeshua ben Shimon Dov, their neshama should have an Aliyah. So we are going to be doing something completely unprecedented in the history of this Pirkei Avos, and that is, we are going to be doing two Mishnayos today. Two Mishnayos. And now you might think that, okay, maybe they're small, and that's why we're going to do two of them. But as you can see in the first big text box that you have, these are actually really big Mishnayos. So how are we going to pull this off to do two in one day? Well, we'll have to see. The reason why we're doing two in one day, even though they're not even back to back, if you noticed, one is Mishnah Beis and one is Mishnah Vav. They're both in the same parak, but there are Mishnayos in between. But as we'll see, there are clear thematic connections, overlaps between the two, with slight differences, and it is those differences that we're going to be partly analyzing today. The Mishnah, the first Mishnah we're going to do is Mishnah Beis. We already started it last week. Last week we spent the whole time talking about the first part of Mishnah Beis, and when we finished the shiur, it sounded like that was the end of the Mishnah, at least thematically. We finished the topic of human nature and the concept of government and what the role of government is, but the Mishnah continues, and the question is, one of the things we're going to ask is why. What's the connection between the first part of the Mishnah and the second part of the Mishnah? Then the next question we're going to ask is then what's the connection from this Mishnah, Mishnah 2, to Mishnah 6, and why does it seem to be repetitive? So with that introduction, let's just jump in. We're going to start by rereading last week's Mishnah. So this is the source A that's right in front of you. Mishnah Bet says, Rabbi Chanina Skan HaKohanim Omer, Rabbi Chanina, who was the vice Kohen, used to say, have a mispalel b'shlomo shel malchus, we should daven for the peace of the kingdom, of the government, she'il malei mora'a ish esre'eu chayim blao, that without fear of the government, then people would just destroy each other. And we analyzed that fully last week. If you're interested in that and you weren't here, you can listen online on yutorah.org. All the shirim are up there. But now the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion Omer. So it's a new person speaking, and it's within the same Mishnah. So that itself is somewhat strange. We've seen it before, but it is strange. Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion Omer. Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion says, anybody recognize Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion? He's one of the Asar Arugei Malchus, one of the 10 martyrs who were killed, who we read about on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. So Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion Omer. So he used to say the following. Shnayim shiyoshvin, two people who are sitting together. Ve'ein beinehen divrei Torah. And in between them, there is no discussion of Torah. So people are just, they're sitting, they're hanging out. They're not talking words of Torah. So what's their stamp of judgment? Hareze Moshav Leitzim. It's like a gathering of scoffers. Right, so you're sitting down, you're just hanging out with your friend, with your spouse, with your kid, you're not doing anything, you're not learning Torah. Moshav Leitzim, a hangout of scoffers. Shneamar, as the Pasuk says. Now, we're going to, as before we read this Pasuk, we're going to be seeing a lot in these two Mishnayos. There's going to be a statement said, and then there's going to be a pasuk, a verse, to prove the point. And any time in Chazal when you have a statement said, and then a pasuk brought to prove a point, what's one thing that we can be thinking about? Where should our brains be going? Well, okay, so what's the connection between the statement and the pasuk? We often, myself included, have a habit of seeing something that Chazal say, that our sages say, and it's a statement that seems to be true, and then they bring a proof from a pasuk and say, okay, that seems to be some loose connection, makes sense, let's just go with it. And then when you stop, take a step back and start analyzing, you're like, wait a second, what does this pasuk have anything to do with what you're trying to say? Is there a real connection, or are you trying to pull a fast one on us by saying, oh, here, I have a proof for you, but wait a second, that doesn't really fit. Now, obviously, our conclusion is going to be that it does fit, but the fact that we need to analyze it might even teach us more, right? It might even teach us more if we can find the differences and the nuances. So we're about to read the Pasuk, and remember, as we read the Pasuk, What does this have to do with the statement he just said? Statement is, two people who are sitting and don't learn Torah, that is a moshav leitzim, a sitting of scoffers. And as the pasuk says, pasuk in the first parak of Tehillim, uvim moshav leitzim lo yashav, that this person who we're praising, the Ashrei Ish, is somebody who does not sit with scoffers. So now, again, if we just start analyzing, it doesn't. What does that have to do with anything? You're telling me two people who are sitting and not learning Torah are a Moshe of Lesim, a sitting of scoffers. What's your proof? That praiseworthy is somebody who doesn't sit with scoffers. That doesn't prove anything. It is, yes, you didn't prove what a sitting of scoffers actually is. So there's something missing here, and as we see in the commentaries, they're going to start putting some pieces together. So that's number one. People sitting, not learning Torah, scoffers. Aval, continuing in the Mishnah. Shnayim sheyoshvim, v'yesh beinehem divrei Torah. Two people who are sitting, and they do have in between them divrei Torah. So this is supposed to be a contrast to the first half. First part is two people sitting, not learning Torah. Here is two people sitting, and they do have Torah. So what's their positive stamp? Shechina beinehem. That God's presence is amongst them. Okay, nice idea. Is that it? Is that all they have? Two people learning Torah, Shechina Beinayim. Do they get any other rewards? Is there anything else? Why just Shechina Beinayim? And what does that mean that the divine presence is amongst them? Again, other things we'll be seeing within the commentators. Shene Emar, but he quotes a pasuk again. So what's our proof from the pasuk? Shene Emar, Az Nidbru Yirei Hashem, then the people who fear Hashem will speak to each other. It's a pasuk in Malachi. Ish el re'ehu, a person to his neighbor. Vayakshev Hashem, Hashem will listen. Vayishma, and he'll hear. Vayikasev sefer zikaron lefanav, and God will write this book of remembrance before him. Le'yirei Hashem ulechoshvei shemo, to those who fear him and to those who recognize and think about his name. So it's a long pasuk, and we're trying to prove from this pasuk that people who speak, Yirei Hashem, people who fear Hashem, who speak between each other, and they think of Torah between each other, they get written down in the Sefer Zikaron. Right? So God is writing that down. Is that a direct proof that the Shekhinah is with them? Maybe, maybe not. But the point here, and I do also want to make this one other caveat. We're going to get lost in the weeds a little bit here. There's a lot of details and there's a lot of nuances. I don't want us to get lost in the big picture. What's the big picture so far of the Mishnah? Right? When you're with somebody, learn Torah. That's if by the end of today we're just confused, as often we are, don't lose that fact. Right? When we're hanging out with each other, there should be Torah between us. There should be some level of discussion of Torah. So here, two people are learning Torah, the Shekhinah is with them, and we quote this pasuk. Now the Mishnah asks a fascinating question, or a question we should all be asking. Why are we stuck on this number two? Well, what about one, right? So, Ein li ela shnayim. That only proves that two people, the Shekhinah is with them. Minayin sha'afilu echad shiyoshev osek b'torah. That somebody who is sitting and learning Torah, or is engrossed in Torah, sha'kadosh baruch hu koveya lo schar. How do I know that one person learning, God gives them reward? Shene Amar, the pasuk in Eicha says, Yeshev badar v'yidom ki natal alav. That the person is sitting alone, and he is v'yidom. What's v'yidom? He's silent, he's quiet. We'll see some of the commentators on that in a little bit. But he's sitting alone and quiet, ki natal alav, because it is becoming of him. There is something coming to him. Now, if you can presume to think about what this pasuk in Eicha is talking about, we're not all, I assume, holding in all of Tanakh, but maybe some of Tanakh, if you can guess, is Eicha, this pasuk in Eicha, that's saying that you're sitting alone and silent, we're learning that that's referring to learning Torah. What is the context of the pasuk in Eicha? The Chorban. So somebody's sitting lonely, despondent, depressed because of all the destruction that's going around him, and kinata Allah, he deserves it. Right? And now we're flipping this pasuk and saying it means that you're sitting alone silently, which we're interpreting as learning Torah, you're going to get reward. Okay, so we'll have to analyze that also a little bit. I know we're bringing up a lot of questions, and I'm going to overwhelm you in a moment even more, so don't worry. If you feel comfortable, don't get comfortable yet. But there's another problem here. Let's read this carefully. What are two people? What's the stamp of two people? What's their reward? Two people learning Torah. You want to call it a reward. What do we say about them? The Shechina is with them. And then the Mishnah says, how do I know that even one... Now, how would you have finished that sentence? How do I know that even one, the Shechina is with them? How do they finish the sentence? How do I know that even one... What does he get? He gets reward. So that's not parallel. Two people, Shechina's with them. And now I'm setting it up to make you think that I'm about to say, how do I know that even one, the Shechina is with them? But I pull a fast one, and I say, how do I know that even one gets reward? And I quote a pasuk. So we'll have to figure out what the pasuk is teaching us. But just for before the pasuk, what do you see? What's the problem with this? Besides the fact that it's flipping, what conclusions can we make from Mishnah 1? One person sitting and learning, what's the question we could ask? Is the Shechina with them?
Well, one person gets a Sechar and the two people...
Or flip it the other way, does that mean that two people don't get Sechar? Two people get the Shechina but not Sechar. One person gets Sechar but not Shechina. Or even more than that, why do I need this Mishnah and this random Pasuk in Eicha to tell me that one person who's sitting and learning Torah gets reward? Isn't that like fundamental that when we do mitzvahs, especially a mitzvah such as learning Torah, that we get reward? So I have to tell you, you might have thought only two people. But even one person gets reward. Why? Random pasuk in Eicha that has nothing to do with anything. So what is going on here? Right? What's this Mishnah coming to teach us in nuances, in big detail? It means learn a lot of Torah even by yourself, and learn a lot of Torah even when you're with people. But in terms of the nuances and the psukim and the inferences, we have to be able to analyze. But we're not done yet. Yeah.
For two people, is the context of eating together for one person?
Where did you see anything about eating? Who said eating? Elazer, you see two people sitting, you assume they're eating. I don't know. You're. The next Mishnah, which we're not doing, talks about three people who are eating together, and there's no Torah between them. So you're close, but that's not this Mishnah. This Mishnah is talking about just two people. Two people, they don't have to be eating necessarily. Okay, so now, let's see Mishnah Vav, and as we see this Mishnah Vav, we're going to try to analyze how Mishnah Vav connects to Mishnah 2. So how does 6 connect to 2? So right underneath where we just left off, Mishnah Vav says, Rabbi Chalapta ish kvar Chananya, Rabbi Chalapta, who was from this village of Chananya, used to say, Omer, Asara shiyoshvim ba'oskim b'torah, 10 people who are sitting and learning Torah, Shechina shruya b'nehem. The Shechina is amongst them. Shenam Mar, as the Pasuk says, Elokim nitzav ba'adas kel, that God is standing within the congregation. So how do we know that that's 10? Anybody know? Eidah is 10. How do we know that Eidah is 10? The word Eidah references 10 from the Meraglim, right? The Meraglim is 10. It's interesting that we learn the concept of 10, that the Shechina is with them, from the fact that the Meraglim, who were not so great people, they didn't do such great things. That's an Eidah, so that's 10. So 10 people sitting and learning Torah, the Shechina is with them, as this Pasuk says. And again, we can analyze how we learn it from the Pasuk, but let's leave that for now. Let's just, off the bat, contrast this to Mishnah 2. What did Mishnah 2 say? That two people. Now all of a sudden we're starting up by saying, how do I know 10 people? Well, I know 10 people because I read Mishnah 2, and Mishnah 2 told me two people. So then obviously I know 10 people. Okay, so Shechina b'nehem, you want to say, is different than Shechina shruya b'nehem. Okay, perhaps that shruya has an added relevance to it, maybe. Okay, so let's keep going. Shemar elokim yitzav ba'adas kel. Uminayim, but now this mission is going to take care of part of the question for us as well. Uminayim afilu chamisha. How do I know even five? Meaning even five what? Even five people that what? That are learning have the Shechina Shriya Beinayim, Shenemar, the Agudato Al Eretz Yisada. Again, another random pasuk from Amos that we're going to learn that Aguda, we'll see in some of the commentators, or perhaps we'll just suffice it for now, is that Aguda is referring to like a hand, five is a grasp, use five fingers. So there's a concept here referencing five, and five Al Eretz Yisada, and that itself doesn't necessarily prove automatically that the Shechina is with you when you're learning Torah, but let's just take it for granted for now. Uminayin, the Mishnah continues, Afilu Shlosha, so you don't stop at 10, don't stop at 5, even 3, that the Shechina is Shriya B'Nayim, Shenemar, Bekarab Elokim Yishpot, that within the amongst God you shall be judged. Now, if for those of us holding in Tehillim, how does the pasuk of Elokim Nitzav Ba'adas Kel end? Right, the pasuk that teaches us 10. Right, the pasuk that teaches us 10 is Elokim Nitzav Ba'adas Kel. We have a different pasuk that teaches Agudato Al Eretz Yisada is for 5, and the pasuk of Elokim Nitzav Ba'adas Kel finishes off Bekarab Elokim Yishpot. It's the same pasuk. The same pasuk that teaches us 10 and 3 is split in half, that the 10 is taught by Elokim Mitzav Ba'adas Kel, and then the 3 is taught by Bekarab Elokim Yishpot. Okay, so keep that in mind also. I know we're having a lot to keep in mind. Uminayin afilu shnayin. Now the Mishnah doesn't finish, doesn't stop. It says, I told you 5, I told you 10, I told you 5, I told you 3. How do I know that even 2? Shenamar, as the pasuk says, Az nidru yirei Hashem, isharei ob'yakshav Hashem v'yishma. Hold on, I know that pasuk from somewhere. Right? This was a pasuk we used before. Right? So the pasuk that taught us that two people in Mishnah Beis is the same pasuk that we're using to teach us two people in Mishnah 6. That the people spoke to each other and they get rewards. And then the Mishnah finishes off. Uminayin afilu echad. How do I know that even one? Anytime that I call out to God, pasuk in Shmos, anytime I call out to God, He will come and bless me. So what's the difference in this Mishnah? Conclusion from this Mishnah to the previous Mishnah? The Chad is different. So in Mishnah 6, well, how is the Chad? What is the Chad? The one person get in Mishnah 6 that he doesn't get in Mishnah 2? More than that. No, Mishnah 1, he gets Schar, but he doesn't get Shechina. Mishnah 6, he gets Shechina. So, one fundamental difference here is one person sitting and learning Torah is the Shechina with him. Other questions we can ask. The Mishnah Beis doesn't deal with 10, doesn't deal with 5, and doesn't deal with 3. So what does Mishnah Beis think about 10, 5, and 3? What's the concept of the Shechina being there? Just because it's with 2, does it automatically mean, do we move up that it's there with 3, 5, and 10? And then, also, why these numbers? Why these numbers?
Isn't parallel with
Is it parallel?
Yeah, same numbers.
Avram starts with 50, goes to 45, goes to... Yeah, it's not. It goes down, but it's not. It might be a similar in terms of but it's not. It's not the same numbers. So we want to ask, why are these numbers? And this is where that question is going to be important for the end of this year, when we get to the end. What are the significance of numbers in Judaism? Do numbers have a strong significance? Do we just pick these in modern numerical thought? Although I was never that great in math, right? In math class, you don't start and thinking about how is 2 inherently different than 4. I have some math teachers over here, right? You just add and you subtract and you multiply and you divide, but 1 is not any better than 3. It might have different properties in terms of how I add and subtract, and you know, but there's no inherent value to numbers in a modern sense. And then, Is that true as well when it comes to Torah? Or is there an inherent meaning, a qualitative difference when it comes to numbers in Torah? And as you'll probably tell, that we're going to quote some sources that there is. that the quality is different, but you're going to have to wait till the end. If the quality is different, then we're going to have to see. So what's the inherent quality of 10 versus 5 versus 3 versus 2 versus 1? How do these all differ from each other? So I'm actually a little bit scared to do this source. I don't want to scare you, but I'll scare you a little bit. Flip the page. There are two sources on the bottom of this page, but we'll get to them. Flip the page, and you see it says source number one is the Medr Shmuel. It's a little scary because it's just one big long page. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a taste of this page. We're not going to go through everything, but I want you to realize that this is how you analyze a Mishnah. If you want a primer on how to analyze a Mishnah, you start by asking as many possible questions that you can ask. Right? Now, in terms of us, me, you, we might not know how to ask all of these questions. We might not have all of the other information necessary from Tanakh and other Mishnayos and other Gemaras to ask all these questions. But a bunch of these questions we could ask if we just slow down and we think. So all this whole huge, gigantic first paragraph is around, I didn't count them, but it's around 10 questions just straight up on the first Mishnah. Just 10 questions. And we'll give you a taste of it just so you can see how to start this. So Vitzarach Lahavin, source number one on this page, Medr Shmuel. Vitzarach Lahavin, Amai Lo Ka'amar, why doesn't it say Shnayim Shiyoshvin Ve'ein Oskin B'Torah? Remember what the Mishnah said? The Mishnah said, Shnayim Shiyoshvin Ve'ein Beinehem Divrei Torah. That there's no words of Torah between them. And then the Mishnah continues, but how do I know that two people, Shnayim Shiyoshvin Ve'yesh Beinehem Divrei Torah? Right? But why don't we just use, what is this term, there is not between them Divrei Torah? That's not how we usually talk. We don't talk that there's in between them Divrei Torah. We say, are you learning or are you not learning? Right? So what is this, why are we saying, we should say, Shnayim Shiyoshvin Ve'ein Oskin B'Torah, they're not learning Torah. And then we finish the Mishnah and say, how do I know that even one person who's sitting and is osek, is learning Torah, is toiling in Torah? Then it would be parallel. So the first thing he's telling us to do when we want to analyze is look for differences and nuances in how words and verbs are presented. What's the difference between yesh beinayim versus oskin? So that's number one. It would have been parallel. Od yesh lahavin. I think we'll just do one more for now. Od yesh lahavin. Eich ka'amar du moshav leitzim. This is a fair question. Don't just take what they say at face value. Analyze. At the end, we'll accept it, but you have to analyze. Two people who are sitting. So what? One question. Ein beinayim divrei Torah. So what are they doing?
They could be eating, but not interacting.
Okay, so good. That's not the obvious reading, but we'll see it in a second. Right. So before we get to the not obvious reading, when there's two people sitting, it doesn't say what they are doing. It just tells us what they're not doing. So what are they doing? So what are our options? Before your option, what are our simple options? Right. They're just schmoozing. They're talking. They're doing. So now, what can they be talking about? So it could be, option one is they're talking about bad things. Notice it doesn't say that. Right? It just says they're not talking Divrei Torah. So they can be talking bad things, they can be talking neutral things, or good things, or maybe they're not even talking. They're just sitting next to each other. They're on their phones, right? So the Mishnah doesn't tell us what they're doing. It just tells us what they're not doing. They're not doing Torah. And now we'll get to your reading in a minute. So let's just read this question now. So how do you call that a grouping of scoffers? It doesn't say they're scoffing. So what do scoffers do? They speak Lashon Hara. Do they make fun of things? They make light of things that are important. Who said they're doing that? Leitzanus is when you're talking about bad things. Lo b'shtika, doesn't say, they could be silent here. How can it be that by just being silent, you're called a scoffer? And then, if just for your own edification, just skim or scan this whole paragraph here and look for how many times he says the word va'od. Right? Every time he says the word va'od is another question. Va'od, 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 va'od. And you can count them on your own. It's probably somewhere around 10. 10 questions where he just loads on this Mishnah. We're not going to do it now because I think that will be overwhelming. But he just asks tons of questions on this Mishnah. His conclusion is in the next paragraph. This is not the simple read, but it is a beautiful idea anyway. So, Amnam. Kavanas Rebbe Hananya, Sha'amar Shnayim Shiyoshim Ve'im Be'neim Divrei Torah. The Kavana that he had, his meaning, his intention was, Eina Kavana Shein Oskin B'Torah. It doesn't mean that they're not learning Torah. Remember, that's his inference. It says, She'ein Be'neim Divrei Torah. It doesn't say, She'ein Oskin B'Torah. They are Oskin B'Torah. They are learning Torah. Ela Kavana She'afilu She'oskin B'Torah. Even though they are learning, Oskim Ko Echad Levado. They're both learning on their own. Ve'einam mitchabrim l'lmod bechevra. They're not grouping together. They are not becoming one in their learning. Lios be'neiem divrei Torah. It should be in between them. They should be discussing it. Kevin shem yoshim b'makom echad. Ve'alzeh kivei mashakasim ve'im be'neiem divrei Torah. That's why it says there's not in between them. V'lo amar ve'in osik b'torah. Because they are being osik b'torah. They are learning. So why is that? So now why is that late sim? If you have two people who are sitting next to each other, both learning, this guy has high standards. You have two people learning, and they are considered most of late sim because they're not talking to each other. Vikaram late sim vadini mo. He's correct to call them late sim. Ki kavanasam lilmod kol echad ve'echad levado. They want to learn on their own. Vishalolios b'neim divrei Torah. They don't want to interact with each other. Hu ve'yoso shekol echad mabil yedias chavero mislotzes bekirbo miyedioso. Because I think I'm better than you, and I think I'm smarter than you. That's the scoffing. Because I think I'm so great, and you're so not great, and so stupid, and you don't know how to learn, and you don't know anything, so I'm going to stay over here, and you stay over there. What is it going to help me to learn with this guy? Learning on their own, and that's considered a late gumor, because they're making fun of the other internally. This is a fascinating read of the Mishnah. It's not the simple read. The simple read is that they're not learning. And if you go back to the first side of the page that we just flipped from, where the Mishnah is, in sources 2 and 3, you'll see that the classic Mefarshim, the first page, the classic Mefarshim deal with it. Their debate is whether or not they're silent, right, or they're saying bad things. If you look at source number 3, the Magen Avot, says v'chol zeh laharchik ha'adam l'shevet ba'oto moshav l'itbato medivrei Torah. So he says, number one is that, let's take big picture here. The big picture here is what? Learn Torah, and don't stay with people who are going to take you away from learning Torah. V'afal pi she'ein oseh davar acher. He says that even though you're not doing anything else, as he's saying, you're not doing anything negative. El shu mitbato medivrei Torah. The very fact that you're not learning itself, kedai hu li'ikar leitz. That's enough for you to be called a scoffer. Because you're not doing things that are important. You have an opportunity to have a meaningful sitting between two people, and instead, you're just wasting your time. Even if you're not doing anything bad, that itself is bad. He says, even though classically a leitz is somebody who is actively scoffing, here it's different. Here, you could be called a scoffer, and I'm just summarizing outside, because of the fact that you're wasting time. If you go to the third line from the bottom towards the end, right after it says Yeshayahu in brackets, it says Mikol Makom he batel mi divrei Torah davar kashahu. If you're wasting your time not learning Torah, that's pretty bad. And now here's a fascinating insight. Ve'im heim shnayim. They're two peoples. So why is it not one? Why is one person who's not learning not called a scoffer? If I'm telling you that two people who aren't learning are scoffers, why? Not because they're doing anything bad, just because they're wasting time. So shouldn't one person also be called a scoffer because he's wasting time? He's not treating Torah properly. So what's his answer to that? It's a fascinating insight. Roy likari moshav and moshav leitzim only if it's two. Shayal lahem lohochiach kol echad chavero ulahayr lo ozim lishmoa bilimudam. Because they should have inspired each other. It's one thing when we're on our own, and it's hard to get us out of that rut of being, you know, wasting time. But if you have two people together, They should encourage each other.
But this is not for women, this whole mission.
It's, I would say, two things. Well, it's actually one long thing. I would say that it is for women. To some extent. Notice women don't have an actual chiyuv of Talmud Torah, but you do have a chiyuv, at least I think, to live a meaningful life. Right? So the question is, how are you going to live a meaningful life? So if there are two women sitting and they're not Beinehem something meaningful. Now, I don't know what maybe you wouldn't be called a late. Maybe there would be. I would say though, that's still a problem, right? That's still a problem, right? So it's not directly the name calling may not be applied to the women, but I think the message is just as much applicable, especially in modern society, to women to men in terms of what you're doing with your time should be meaningful. Maybe that doesn't have to be Talmud Torah as much as is with men, but it definitely should be something that we're sure. Husband and wife sitting together. Ben ben am devar Torah. That's not so good. Again, you have other things to do. You have other things to do. You have to live life. You have to live life. But to the extent that all of our interactions should be infused with either words of Torah or living Torah, then I think that's true for everybody. Okay, so that's the Rashbat. Now, flip to the second page, so not the second side, but the second page itself. A few more insights before we get to the numerology. Here's another reading that's not the classic reading, but it's another, I think, practical interpersonal insight that could be inspiring. So look at source number 4. This is taken from the Art Scroll Sfas Emes. So the Art Scroll has a running commentary on Sfas Emes, and they translate it, but it's not just a translation. I think there's an embellishment of commentary. So if you look here, the Hebrew on the top of source number 4 is the Sfas Emes itself, and then on the bottom is the translation / commentary. So he says here, Shnei Yehudim sheyoshvim bitzavsa ve'ein beinehem. So this is a very Hasidic reading right now. Two Jews who are sitting together, but there's Ein Beinehem. What does that mean, there's Ein Beinehem? This is extra credit, because we've seen this before in the past as a Hasidic reading of another Mishnah. I don't remember what it was. It'll pop in my head at some point. But we saw Rav Kook quote an idea that's similar to this. What is the concept of Ein in Hasidic lore?
One.
No. God. Ein is nothingness, which is also a reference to God. And we are tasked with trying to parallel that Ein of being nothing. What does that mean? So let's read this. Shnei Yehudim sheyoshvim bitzavsa ve'ein beinehem. There is nothing in between them. She'ein ha'echad misnase al chavero. What does it mean that there's nothing in between them? It means that there's no competition between them. One's not trying to get over the other. V'ha'ein beinehem rotza lomar she'ha'anava mikasheras eshneim. The fact that now they're humble, right? It's positive. V'ein beinehem is not a negative. According to everybody else, two people are learning v'ein beinehem divrei Torah is negative. Here he's saying the Ein Beinehem is positive. The fact that there's nothing in between them, there's no competition, there's no ego, is a good way of putting it. There's no ego of one over the other, and that's connecting them. The Ein Beinehem, Rav Zalman Shanav Mekshar Shneim, Divrei Torah, Kesher Zeh Nichshav Kedivrei Torah. Kesher Zeh Nichshav Kedivrei Torah. That itself is like a Dvar Torah. The fact that you can have an interpersonal relationship that doesn't have competition in between them is super important, as much as learning Torah is. Le'umas zos im heim bebchinas harei zeh, but if you have a status of zeh, what is zeh referencing? Zeh means this. In rabbinic terminology, when we say zeh, what does that mean? It means that we're pointing to something. Right? It means that there's something exists. Zeh is in front of us. Right? So if we're harezeh, if I exist in a sense, if my ego exists, shekol echad machshev es yeshus atzma, that everybody thinks of themselves as being so important, that's a moshav leitzim. Then that's when you're going to have problems. So this is a complete homiletic reading of the Mishnah. It doesn't. It flips it on its head. But the message is actually the same as the Medrash Shmuel. Right? The message is that when you have two people sitting together, there should not be any egos getting in the way of them serving God and interacting with each other. If you want to read the English, presents it in a clearer fashion. According to the Kutzker Rebbe, the Mishnah may actually be praising even individuals who only sit beside one another, but do so with humility. The mere fact that neither of these individuals considers himself to be greater than his fellow, ein beinayim, there is nothing between them, i.e. neither one feels superior to the other, is regarded as if they were discussing Torah thoughts. On the other hand, if the participants are imbued with a feeling of their self-worth, as the Mishnah continues, harei zeh, behold, this is, behold how great and important I am, then such a group is considered to be a gathering of cynics. It's a complete stretch, but that doesn't... It's 100% a stretch. Hasidic vorts don't have to be shot.
No, I'm not Hasidic, but my question is, how do you jump from this idea that it's as if they were discussing Torah thoughts if they're sitting quietly?
That's how important it is for us to have an interpersonal relationship that doesn't have strife in between it, where I'm trying to think that I'm better than you. That you're living Torah right then. You're living what the essence of Torah is from the fact that we can be with each other and not be thinking about how I'm better than you or what you did to me or what I'm going to do to you or whatever. That itself is the essence of what Torah is.
And that's nothing to do with learning.
Correct. Well, he's connecting it to learning Torah. It's as if you're learning Torah. It's pretty practicing. Yeah, it's you're putting into play what you're working on. Right. Okay. Look at, briefly, sources 5, 6, and 7. We're going to do it outside. Sources 6, 5 and 6 deal with the concept of Vayidom, which we referenced when we said that one person who is sitting and learning Torah gets reward. Why? Because it says, Yeshev Vadad Vayidom, somebody who's sitting alone and he's silent, he gets rewards. So the question is, how do I know silence means learning Torah? So the commentators here, the Rambam deals with it in source number 5. He says, Vayidom means, doesn't mean silence, it actually means Hadibor HaChashai. What does that mean? It's like a whisper. That's it's like private talk.
Could be meditation?
I don't think that's what he means, but in theory. And he even says that that's what's called Dimamah Daka. Vayidom comes from Dimamah Daka. It means a silent whisper with Eliyahu. And he even says, in the Targum on Vayidom, right, so the question is, Vayidom Aharon, it says Aharon was silent. The Targum actually translates it different. Vayidom Aharon, how does it translate? V'shabach Aharon. So what does that mean? I think, maybe I'm wrong, it sounds like Aharon was sort of, he's doing like a Tzidduk Hadin type of thing, where he actually verbalized something. So Vayidom doesn't mean silent. It means a silent verbalization, like a quiet, it means like a whisper of sorts. So Vayidom doesn't mean complete silence, it means some sort of talking. So therefore, we can infer with a little bit of a stretch that Vayidom here doesn't mean complete silence, it means some sort of a verbalization of Torah. Rabbeinu Yonah, though, says that in source number 6, you can read it inside on your own, that it doesn't just mean speaking, it could mean silence. And this is an interesting dispute, which we're not going to get into, I'll just bring it up, is that does it count? Does learning Torah in your head count? Right? If you just think Torah, is that considered Talmud Torah? Or does it require some level of speaking or verbalization? And it's fascinating discussions about this. Do I need to say Birchas HaTorah if I'm just thinking Torah? Or do I only have to say Birchas HaTorah if I verbalize the Torah? So there's halachic discussion about this. And there's also, it's a broader philosophical discussion in terms of the role of thought and the role of speech within Judaism. But we're not going to get into that now. I'm just bringing that up so you can see how the different commentators deal with the word Vayidom, whether it means silence completely or some level, you need some level of verbalization for it to be considered Torah. Psak is, it's machlokas. Now, one more interesting point before we get to the numbers part. So if you look here in source number 7, it's another Sfas Emeset. Those are another brilliant read here. Whether or not it's pshat or not, we can argue, but it doesn't have to be. So he says, source number 7. Yesh lomar hakavana b'masha katab yeshev bada. So this is what we're talking about now. What does it mean that you're sitting in silence? Hainu b'li hashras hashchina. Right? Remember what our inference was of Mishnah 1. Mishnah 1 was two people has Shechina with them. One person gets reward, but doesn't have Shechina with them. Yeshomar again, HaKavara Mashkotav Yeshay Badad Hainu B'li Ashras HaShechina Mitam Vayido. The only reason there's no Shechina with you is because of the fact that you're silent. Masha'eno Medaver B'divrei Torah. So he's reading it that Vayido means complete silence. And the reason, he's saying, the reason why we can't say the Shechina is with you is because you're completely silent. So what's the inference? Talk, and what happens when you talk? Then the Shechina is with you, right? Umemela nishma ki amedaber dvar Torah, divrei Torah, eino bada. Then you're not alone. Rak Shechina shruya etzlo. The Shechina is with you. And that, if you read it in the English, only those who are utterly silent and devoid of Divrei Torah are truly alone. However, those who study Torah, even if they reside in utter solitude, will enjoy the presence of the Shechina. And I think this is just a nice message. Again, before we get to the numbers, we might come to this towards the end. You know what, we'll do a side point now. But I think this is just a nice message here of another broad picture of the Mishnah. So what does it mean to be alone? And if you have God with you and the Shechina is there with you and you're learning Torah, you're never really alone. You know, you can be, there'll be no other person with you, but if you have that connection to God, there's always a presence with you that you can feel not lonely or alone. And I will actually jump now. Go to your last sheet. It's the 8.5 by 14. So it's the last sheet. It's thought by Rav Cook. So it's double-sided. There's a lot here. I think I'm just going to do one idea. Go to the last page. So the last page and last side. So it's literally the last thing in your source sheet. Last side. Last side. Okay, so Rav Cook here says, again, this is the top of the page. The first word should say upam. First word on the top of the page is say upam. So if you look below that, he talks about an interesting reason why one of the messages we had before was that two people, you should learn with two people, and there's a when you're two people learning, there's a positive benefit to that in contrast to one person learning next to another person. That's not so good. In this section on the bottom right hand side, he talks about what the benefit of learning with two people versus one person is, because you might say, I learn better by myself. Well, he says here three things why it's better to learn with somebody else, but that's not what we're going to do for now. Go to the bottom left-hand side of the page where it says, Minayin Shafilu Echad. So he says, Amnam, he says, Amar b'gemara, Cherev el habadim vin noalo, Cherev al soneim shal tamidei chachamim sha'oskim b'tor bad b'bad. So there's a contrasting gemara that's a problem for this Mishnah. The contrasting gemara says that it's not good to learn alone. Here we're saying that if you learn alone, you get reward. The Gemara seems to come down harshly on somebody who learns alone. Hainu she'ein yisron la'osek b'torah levado b'lo chavrusa. We should always learn with somebody else. V'lo zu ela od klal yesh b'zeh. It's not just that you should always learn, but there's a problem by only learning by yourself. Chas v'sholom. Ulam kol zeh ba'adam ha'moes b'limud ma'achem. But he says that that's only talking about if you have this interpersonal problem. If you learn better on your own and you love everybody, right, and there's no, the reason why I'm not learning with you isn't because I think I'm better than you or because I don't think you know anything or because whatever. It's just because I happen to learn better on my own, but I still love you and we're still good friends, then that's not a problem. It says the whole curse is only it's ba'adam ha'mois b'limud ma'acherim. They don't wrote to lomod in zulaso, mitoch gaiva v'yahirus, right, it's an arrogance. Kilo yavin v'yasko mechaveru klum, I don't want to learn anything from you. But ulam im kvar lama im chaver. I've learned with people. I know how to learn with people. But now it's limudo nekalab ipnei atzmo. It's easier for me to just do it on my own. Yach liot shekach tovlo. It could be that it's good for his learning. Oshem meduber gamba mishlo motzi mishi yilmad imo. Maybe I don't have somebody I can find. Oshem motzi chaver matim le dargaso. I can't find somebody who's on my level. Kai gavna. Then you're okay. Now, but here's the fascinating part. Go to the top right now. It's actually Don't change a page. Same page, top right-hand column. I photocopied it from the next page, but put it on this page so I didn't have to make another page. So this is a direct continuation. So the bottom left that we just read continues to the top right of the page. Fascinating story. Upam ba tamad lifnei Rabbeinu HaGadol HaRatzvi Yehuda HaKohen Kook. So somebody came, a student came to Ratzvi Yehuda Kook, and he said, part of it got cut off, but he says, I can't find a chavrusa. Do I have to learn with a chavrusa? The gabi limud bli chavrusa. Heshiv Rabbeinu, second line, shetzarech lechapesh l'shtad l'mon chavrusa. You have to try to find the chavrusa. Zehu haseder haragil. That's how you're supposed to learn. You're supposed to learn with somebody else. Ukisha amar haTalmid. I tried to find somebody. I tried to find a chavrusa that fits me. It didn't work. Next line. Pasach Rabbeinu as a sefer beis zvul, the Maran HaGrim Charlap. So he opens up a sefer from Rabbi Charlap, who was a great rabbi in Yerushalayim before that. So he opens up the sefer. Behira l'talmido mashakasav sham b'akdamasu. In the beginning of the sefer, it writes as follows. Uve eretz Yisrael dai be'echad. When you're learning in Israel, you can learn by yourself. You can learn by yourself, right? And then it continues, the Vishule Agilion Sian Rabbeinu Od Mikros Hazeh, and then Rabbi Yehuda pointed to a number of other sources that did this point, but I think the philosophical point or the Musar point for us is the Shechina, right? We're learning, and when we learn, it's good to have a chavrusa, because chavrusas help us learn better. When we're by ourselves, because we can't find the chavrusa, the Shechina is still Beinehem, and in Eretz Yisrael it's even stronger, because the Shechina is even stronger in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore it's less important to learn with the chavrusa, because you have God with you. At least that's the way that we're reading it. We're not going to get into that, but the Shechina, the environment of Eretz Yisrael has more godliness to it. We're not going to get into that now. I don't know. But what does it mean that the Shechina is Beinehem when you learn Torah? What does that literally mean? I don't know. I'm saying I don't know exactly how God works, but that's the land. That's where the Shechina, when the Beis Hamikdash was around, that's where the Shechina centralized. But it's stronger in certain places. Yeah?
Why did they use the term Shechina here and not Kadosh Baruch Hu? Because Shechina, I was told, is a feminine and it's more nurturing. Or does it matter? Why did they use one term and not the other?
That's a good question. It could be that there's something there to it. It could be that there's not. But you could write something. It could be. Okay. So now we're gonna close with this following idea about the numbers. So go to source number 8. So we're back to where we jumped off. Source number 8 in the pages. And this is from the Abarbanel. And the Abarbanel pins our two Mishnayos together. And this is why we did these two together in the first place. So the Abarbanel pins our two Mishnayos together and says you can ask the following contrast. So source number 8 on these source sheets before the photocopied pages, it should say Abarbanel. So the Abarbanel says as follows. Mechuvanem al pi kavana acheres, v'hu. Sherebi chalafta im heyoso ben kfar, ra'a bedivere bichananya ben tradion, shnei dvarim bilti misyashu metzlo. So we had two Mishnayos. So we're saying the second Mishnah saw two things that he didn't like in the first Mishnah, and that's what he had to disagree with. Ha'echad, the first thing, everybody see where we are? The first thing that the second Mishnah disagrees with the first Mishnah, shebe inyan hasharos Hashras Hashchina Ba'oskin B'Torah Amar Levad Shnayim V'Yorah She'ein Mala Yosra Yona Ba'oskin B'Torah V'Yosem B'Shum Mispar Mesparim Mimashiyah B'Shnayim. Remember, in the first Mishnah, what was our starting point in terms of numbers? Two. Two people, Shechina's with them. What about three? What about five? What about ten? According to the first Mishnah, the Abarbanel is saying, said it doesn't matter. There's no fundamental difference between 2, 5, 10, 20, 100. A million. 2 Shechinas Beinehem, 10 Shechinas Beinehem. And that's it. The second Mishnah is going to disagree with that. But let's see. So that's number one thing that he does a close read. That the Shechina for the first is just with 2 and there's no fundamental difference. Habez, Shebeinyan ha'echad lo amar Rabbi Chananya ben Trajan shetishrei lav shechina. Remember, in the first Mishnah, one person learning, we've mentioned a number of times, doesn't have shechina. He just gets schar. All he gets is reward. He doesn't have the shechina with them. Because of these two differences, number one, that according to the first Mishnah, there's no difference between 2 and 10 and 100, but according to the second Mishnah, there seems to be a difference. And then because the first Mishnah says the first person doesn't have shechina, but he just gets reward. That's why he felt like he had to say something. There is a fundamental difference between the different levels of people who are learning Torah. Because there are differences based on the numbers. And the Abarbanel goes and explains to you all the numbers. Instead of us seeing the Abarbanel, we're going to see it slightly differently in the Maharal. So flip your page first to the next photocopied page. So turn the page. It's the next page. On the top it should say, why does the Mishnah discuss groups? If you look at the bottom left and the bottom left and bottom right, it says 162 and 163. Okay, it's the Maharal and Pirkei Avos. So we're starting by one page. On the bottom right, it says 162. Okay, so this is a photocopy from Art Scroll, put out a translation slash, it's more of a commentary, so it's a summarization. It's not an exact parallel translation. So there's a summary of the Maharal and Pirkei Avos. And here the Maharal says, why does the Mishnah, top of page 162, which is really from 161, as you can tell, I photocopied it again and put it on this page. So why does the Mishnah discuss groups of various size that study together? If the divine presence rests with even one person, why bother to mention 2, 3, 5, and 10 people? Each of these numbers has a special distinction, which we will now explain. Okay, so here's where he starts explaining the numbers. The number 10 is a complete group, because 10 is the base of the units, now we're on the right below that, which can be added to. For example, did something skipped here? 1 second. Adding 3 gives 4, adding 4 gives 5, and so on. When the collection reaches 10, it is a complete group that cannot be increased. Any increase, such as 11, just repeats the digits over, starting at 1, without introducing any new qualities. Now, this is a pretty abstract principle. Again, in our minds, this doesn't really work. But what he's saying is that 10 is complete. And the way he's explaining it, again, I think for our modern minds, doesn't really make any sense. But 11 is fundamentally different than 10 because it just starts repeating the digits over again. Okay? Right. Well, we'll listen to one. As a practical illustration, 10 Jews are considered a community. In the context of laws which revolve around God's holiness, the quorum for public prayer is 10. And adding to the quorum makes no qualitative difference. Right. So that's true. Right. You can have a minion of 10. Once you have a minion of 10, it doesn't matter if you have 15 or 25 or 100 or a million. You have a concept of Rov Am Hadras Melech, that more people the better. But that's not what he's arguing, it's not a fundamentally or qualitatively difference than 10. That is the characteristics of a group as distinct from an individual. Once it is complete, once you have a group of 10, it cannot be further completed. It's complete already. 10 is complete. It is reasonable that God associates himself with a quorum of 10, since he who is complete is found with that which is complete. God is complete. 10 is complete. A minion is 10. That's why God is with a minion. Okay, it's a little bit of a one to the other, to the other, to the other, to make the point. And then he says, each number mentioned in this Mishnah has a unique characteristic as follows. One is an interesting one. One does not include anything else. Hence, it is not relevant to counting. I'm not sure what that means. Two is the first number of counting, and it is the first even number. Okay. Three is the first odd number. Now, why is three the first odd number? Because one doesn't count. Okay. Five is the first digit that comprises an odd number and an even number, i.e. 2 plus 3. Okay. 10 constitutes a category as opposed to individual members of that category. 4 is not mentioned in the Mishnah because it has no characteristics that have not already been demonstrated by the numbers up to 3. So now what he does, and we're not going to read it out loud inside now, you can do it on your own, is he goes through and explains with his own concept of numerology what the one means, what the two means, what the three means, what the five means, and what the ten means. Again, I don't think we get this. We don't understand this. This is, you know, Renaissance thought that is based on previous thoughts. I'll actually show you in a second. Flip back a page. That's the Maharal. The Maharal. But flip back a page. The Abarbanel does something similar too. It's around the same time. Abarbanel is a little bit before the Maharal. Flip back a page. The top of the page says Alan Brill. Okay, so Alan Brill, Professor Alan Brill, we just had here for Shabbos. I'll give you a second to find it. The top of the page says Alan Brill, source number 9. So Alan, Professor Alan Brill, we just literally had last Shabbos. So the reason why I'm the one who brought him in was because last semester I took a class with Professor Dr. Yaakov Elman, Zatzal, who just passed away, Yitz's father. So I took a class on Maharal, and I wanted to learn more about Maharal. So I went on YU Torah, and I did a search, and there's a series of shirim from Professor Alan Brill on the Maharal. So his classes that he gave on the Maharal are up on YU Torah. So I listened to all of them, and that's how I got into his thought, and that's, you know, eventually we got him to come to Kingsway. But he didn't talk about the Maharal at all when he was here, but in an article that he wrote as the Maharal's an early modern thinker, he spends a little bit of time discussing this numerology, and this is the last thing that we'll do for today. So he says here, it's quoting from the article, besides the former logic of unity, Maharal uses number symbolism to show where details fit into a broader perspective in which numbers are emblems of distinct ideas. And before we read further for a second, the whole point of this article that he's writing is he's analyzing the concept of Renaissance thought, which is right before the Maharal comes into play, and explaining how the thought that was prevalent at the time, just like we are influenced by Western thought, and you can't possibly argue that we're not, right? Our thought process, the way we view the world, is influenced by Western thought. Yes, we try to have Torah thought to be the primary, but the way we think is influenced by that. So he argues, based on a lot of different sources, that the Maharal was very influenced by the Renaissance thought that was happening at that time. So you have medieval thought, which is before that, and you have the Rambam, etc., who is very influenced by thought during medieval time. And then you have more modern thinkers who are influenced by modern thought. And this article tries to explain that the Maharal is in this category of himself as an early modern thinker. He's somewhere in between medieval and modern thought, and there's a lot of Renaissance thought that is going on in the Maharal's works. And one of these concepts of Renaissance thought is number symbolism, which dates, as we'll see, before that, but it's also in terms of the analogies. And with that, let's keep reading. He'll explain it better than I do. Maharal uses qualitative number symbolism as a means of understanding analogy. If anything of the same number has the same quality, one can link not just A to B, but A to B to C to D to E. So, as an example, if the number 7 is found in the 7 days of the week, it corresponds to 7 planets, which correspond to the 7 prophets, which can correspond to 7 generations, which can correspond to the 7 parts of a mitzvah. The point is that once I have 7, all those 7s are now connected. Because to us, 7 is just a number. To the Maharal, 7 is there's an underlying theme in 7 that reflects some bigger qualitative part of the universe. So anytime there's a 7, there's a direct connection. And we just saw that the Maharal did that with 10, right? 10 is the number of, is a perfect number. 10 is the number of a minion. So therefore, and minion and 10 is perfect. So therefore, God must have a minion because God is perfect. So there's an analogy. Once you have these ideas, you start linking ideas to idea to ideas that everything is connected if it has the number 7. Everything that has the number 2, you can jump from, oh, this has 2, that has 2, that has 2. There must be some underlying theme that connects all of these things together. He continues here. Number symbolism goes back to antiquity and over the centuries returned in many philosophic systems and in Kabbalah. The innovation of Renaissance thinkers is the use of these qualities to construct strings of analogies. The following is Maharal's number symbolism. So here's just, and this is the real reason why I'm bringing this in right now, here's just a brief synopsis in clear fashion of what all these numbers mean to the Maharal. One is indivisible unity. Two stands for separation, machlokas. Three is plurality and imperfection. Four is completion and perfection. Six is the physical world, space as in mixed sides of a cube. Seven is about time. This world is measured in time, days of the week. The planets correspond to seven because they generate the movement of the spheres that generate the days of the week. And what's the problem with that? Once you have more planets. Right, whatever. Eight is above the natural order. Now, this is the famous Maharal, that eight is above the natural order. That's where he talks about Hanukkah is eight. What else is eight? Gris Milah is eight. So eight, the seven is Teva. Seven is natural. Eight is Lamala Min HaTeva, is above natural. And that's this concept here. Eight is above the natural order of six and seven. A mitzvah which shows in the natural world a covenant grip between Jews and God is an eight, like circumcision, which shows that in this physical world of space and time, only available to Jews is the order above natural, reflected in the number 10, which is the power above creation, as taught in Sefer Yetzirah. Non-Jews must make do with the ordinary nature, reflected in the number 7. 10, and this is for our Mishnah, 10 is perfect, unified multiplicity, without quantity. God is a 10 to reflect his importance, but he is without quantity, so he is also a 1. So God has both 10 in terms of completeness and 1, which isn't a real number, because God isn't really countable. When referring to God as a unified, as unified, he is one. But in order to show how his unity is multiplicity, he is 10. 12 is plurality of this world, includes the 12 tribes, the zodiac, 12 organs of the body. 13 is fullness, plurality of the world, etc. These are the last sentence. These numerical values also work with multiplication. So you think you're done with just knowing what 1 to 13 is. But now you can start multiplying everything. For example, 12 is 4 times 3. So if 3 was this world and 4 is perfection, perfection in this world would be 12. So it's really mind-boggling, and we don't fully grasp it, but this was how they understood numbers. The numbers aren't just a number line, and they're not just these quantities. There's a quality to the number. There's a whole life underneath the numbers, and it creates a whole system where you can now create endless amount of Divrei Torah that underline how these all number. Anytime you find a number, if you find a number and you want to know about what the Maharal said, he'll say something. There's a number, he has something to say about it, and how it applies to everything. So now, in terms of how this fits in our mission, again, you could go in your own time if you want to read how the art scroll summarizes the Maharal and the Mishnah. So how does that fit into one person learning Torah? How does it fit into two people learning Torah? 3, 5, 10? It's all outlined in the sheet that you have, and feel free to read that on your own.